Do you remember a while back, some were predicting that libraries would soon be obsolete? Well, so much for their careers as fortune tellers, huh? It just wasn't in the cards for them. Welcome to the full story on WSHU online at WSHU.org, and you can listen on our app if you so desire. You just have to download it first. So here we are. We're coming to the end of 2019, and seriously, do you remember those predictions? Here they were. Print is dead. No one's going to listen to the radio. Libraries will be gone. Ha! I'm happy to say all three predictions were wrong, especially when it comes to libraries and the radio, which are thriving in our region. Today, we're going to talk about them, and we're going to start by bringing in Beth Crowley. Beth is the past president of the Connecticut Library Association and is now the legislative co-chair, and she is also the director of the Cheshire Public Library. And we're being joined by Sherry Szymanski, who's the director of the Stratford Library. Sherry, Beth, welcome. It's a pleasure to have both of you on.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having us.
Beth, I'd like to start with you, just so we can give what the umbrella organization is about. What does the Connecticut Library Association do?
So the Connecticut Library Association is the professional organization of librarians, library staff, friends, and trustees, and we all work together to advance the interests of libraries in Connecticut. We provide public or professional development, and our tagline is that we've been leading the way for Connecticut libraries since 1875. So
wow.
We've been around for quite a while, and we don't plan on going anywhere anytime soon, despite the predictions you mentioned.
Well, that's the thing, Sherry. It's because I remember these predictions very clearly from a number of years ago when the internet was starting to explode, and I remember people saying, look, iPads are coming in, and people will just download all the books, and they're going to download the movies. People won't have to go out to bookstores or libraries anymore. They're all going to be gone. How's your library?
Well, the Stratford Library is busier than ever. We're working a lot with patrons coming in to explore new technologies. They still come in for the books, and we certainly have a very, very avid group of readers. We still do all of our traditional children's programming, but we also have a really, really enthusiastic crowd of young people coming in to try new technologies, whether they're doing 3D printing or they're exploring virtual or augmented reality or trying drones for the first time. It's an opportunity for us to level the playing field in our community for people that maybe can't afford to have things like Wi-Fi at home, but they can certainly come in and use what we have available. And we're thrilled that they're coming in for those new technologies in addition to the traditional library, what you think of as the library.
Wait a second. Did you say drones?
Yeah.
Drones. I mean, I remember when I was a kid going to the library, all I heard was shh.
Well, we're not using it inside the library.
So,
they are a little noisy.
So you take them outside, the kids show up, and you have these organized events, and you teach them about all these different technologies, including drones.
We do. And we also have a dedicated group of volunteers that come in every day, and they help us by staffing our makerspace, which we call the UCreate space. And so they help share what they know so that anybody from the general public can come in and explore the technologies. So we're mentoring young people as well as providing opportunities to expose them to things that they perhaps don't have access to at home.
Beth, where do the libraries get their funding from?
Most libraries are funded primarily through their town tax base. There are libraries who are funded 100% from their municipality, and others have a proportion of the funding that comes through their taxes. And then the rest of it is usually made up with fundraising. Friends of Connecticut Libraries, those groups that exist within libraries, many of them will run the book sale or sell books online now, also provide a lot of the funding, particularly for programming. My friends group, for instance, provided last year over $100,000 to us both for programming and for a renovation project that we were doing. So that is another area where we get our money.
That's fantastic. So it's $100,000 that was raised for the Cheshire Public Library?
Yes. About half was for programming and half was for our renovation project to buy new furniture for the spaces that we were developing.
Sherry, do you have something similar in Stratford?
The Stratford Library is actually an association library, and we are We are partially funded by the town, and then we have an endowment that provides funding for us operationally. And then we also have, we do not have a friends group, but our library board operates several fundraisers each year. In fact, we have a fundraiser this weekend. Well, it'll probably be over by this program airs, but we have a mini golf event this weekend that will raise funds to help pay for programs and materials for the library.
Beth, what's the biggest challenge facing libraries nowadays?
I would still say it's funding. You know, it is still very difficult most of us get less than 1% of the overall municipal budget, and it's still really tough to get all of the funding that we need for the many demands, as Sherry was mentioning, all of the programs and things that we offer. There is a cost to us, and being able to supply the materials to meet the demands of the patrons can be very challenging.
Sherry, I have to say that over the last few years, when I would go to a library, I would always be, I wouldn't say surprised. After the first few times, I was like, wow, this is the new normal. The number of young people who were hanging out at the libraries, because for a while, I think it was older people, but it seems to be a renaissance nowadays.
There definitely is an uptick in among millennials who are using the library. You know, traditionally what we would see is parents of young children coming in and then people that were approaching retirement age who were coming in to use the library to save money and to go to programs. But now what we're seeing is because we're providing access to Wi-Fi and we don't charge for it, because libraries sometimes have cafes and they serve food in the building, it becomes sort of a social hub within a community. We are, rather than being that place where you are shushed by the librarians, we have become this public space in our library, in our town, where anybody is welcome. And, you know, it's the one place that you can go to all year round that doesn't cost anything and that there's no expectation that you're going to spend money in the space. So it's a welcoming space to people from all walks of life.
And Beth, I also noticed the last few years how many of the local libraries are just being upgraded. Many towns seem to take pride in their libraries nowadays, and they're expanding them, redoing them, because they know it's now, if you will, the hub.
Yes, to Sherry's point, and I think this is the reason for the expansion, we've become what some people refer to as that third place. It used to be like the local barber shop or the post office where people would go and talk and meet their friends and their neighbors. And I think with the advance of technology, people are really looking for that personal connection. So where we're seeing a big uptick is in program attendance, but also in our recent renovation, we added a couple of extra study rooms. So just a quiet place for people to come and work remotely and have that space has been important. So libraries have needed to expand their places to be able to do that. We added an extra program room and study space for people to meet that demand. Last year, we had over 222,000 visits to the library. So, you know, we definitely are a busy place and we need space for the people that are coming in.
When you say program attendance, do you mean for performances, art exhibits, things like that?
All of that, story time, lectures. We're also doing a lot of things that are quality of life types of programs. We just had one on Medicare today. We're doing things to educate people about the census, health-related issues, vaping. And my library is planning a series this spring and summer leading up to the election, community conversations about some of the tougher topics that people want to talk about, such as gun rights and gun control and things like that.
Sherry, I have about 2 minutes left in this segment. Can you give us some final thoughts and maybe touch on something that you wanted to talk about that I didn't ask you?
Sure. One of the big issues in libraries today, a lot of people don't realize that their local library is a source for e-books and for downloadable content, not just books, but audiobooks and videos and not DVDs. We still have them, but we're mostly doing downloading. And one of the major issues that is facing every local library that is trying to provide these services is that our publishers that we work with, we have basically what we call the Big Five, that are the largest publishers of new material. And Macmillan's been a publisher that has actually begun to tighten up the reins on the availability of their digital content. For years, we've had the ability to purchase our digital content and provide access to our patrons, and libraries have played well. You know, we have these contracts where you buy one copy and one person can use it at a time. You can only use it for so many uses or so many months at a time, and then it has to be purchased again because a downloadable item never wears out. And right now what we're dealing with is we're dealing with publishers, or especially Macmillan, who has decided that they no longer want to sell us their newest title. So we have to wait 8 weeks after a book is published before we can actually purchase it, and then we have the privilege of paying about four times the price of that item than a general public patron would pay. So libraries are really struggling, I think, to meet the demand for these digital downloadable titles for our patrons in the same way that we have been able to meet the demand for print media. And so that is our big issue right now that we're fighting.
Beth, I only have 20, 25 seconds for some quick final thoughts, please.
I would just go on to say that for every dollar of tax money that goes into a library, we return on average about $5 to $6 of materials and services. So if you have that library card in your wallet, you have one of the most valuable cards you could ever own.
Beth Crowley, past president of the Connecticut Library Association, now the legislative co-chair, and Sherry Szymanski, who is the director of the Stratford Library. I thank you both. It was a great conversation. Please come back. We're going to find out how one city continues to provide great service. John Saltis is with the Bridgeport Library. He's the assistant city librarian. Hey, John, how are you? Nice to meet you.
Oh, just fine. Good to talk to you.
Same here. Are the libraries in Bridgeport more popular than ever, like many other libraries across the state?
The short answer to that is yes. We do things a little differently, but yes, we are popular.
Why? I mean, really, I remember the predictions, and this goes back 15 years or so ago, when everyone was saying, look, the iPads are coming, everyone's going to have a Chromebook and a laptop, and why would anybody need to go to a library?
Oh, I think I can address that. First off, a lot of books are still popular, believe it or not, and we still have good circulation on our print materials. We also do e-books. We have a streaming service. You can access movies, music, a number of things. Also, databases, and you can also do this remotely. If you have a Bridgeport Library card, all these services are free. But beyond that, Bridgeport, as I'm sure you know, is not the most prosperous city in the state by any means. And many of our patrons do not have computers. They may have iPhones, but it's not the same as a computer. So we have over 300 public access computers here at the library. And people come in and they can use those. They have free and open access. Some come in to watch a movie. Some come in to play games. Many come in to do things like filling out a job resume. Most companies now, regardless of the position, you have to fill that application out online. And if you don't have a computer, that becomes an issue.
Hmm.
We also have large immigrant population. They may need help contacting immigration, renewing or getting a green card, on and on and on. So while we may not answer as many reference questions as we used to, the questions we do answer, we're generally correct about, and we can show you how to find the right information. They say, you know, Google will give you 10 million answers, but we'll make sure you get the right one.
I love that. So it sounds from what you're saying that libraries are more or less a community center nowadays.
That is a large part of our focus now. In fact, our slogan is we are a gathering place for the entire community. And we are. In addition to the services I mentioned, we stress programming now. We do much more programming than we used to when I first entered the profession more years ago than I care to talk about. But that could range from anything from computer classes for seniors who might not be as adept as some others, although that's kind of changed now, to job searching things, financial literacy, plethora of youth children's programs. We have something going on virtually every day. And, you know, we also do a lot of fun things, too. Halloween is very big here at the Bridgeport Public Library.
Yeah.
And in Black Rock, where I used to work at the branch there, they have a huge Halloween parade. Here downtown, we had over 500 kids last Halloween celebrating, trick-or-treating, and we do concerts, and as it's a community center.
Yeah,
it's you know, we want people to have fun too.
It's not your grandfather's.
That's all great, but come on in and have some fun.
It's not your grandfather's library, is it? I mean,
exactly.
You know, and not only that, I've noticed with the number of libraries, they have art exhibits, chess matches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, a little bit of everything. You know, you mentioned youth, so you have a lot of kids who are coming in.
Yes, we do. We have an excellent youth services programs or department here downtown at the main building, but we offer services to kids and teens at all of our branches. And again, we have fun programs, but we also have learning things. We have an excellent coding program where we call them tweens. Come in, and when they walk out, they know how to code.
Mm.
I'm a little shaky on coding, but these tweens, they know how to do it now, and even younger.
It's amazing, isn't it? Hey, John, for a few years, some wondered about the funding for libraries in the cities and in urban areas. And for a number of years, especially back in the 80s, it was a little shaky in Bridgeport. How's your funding nowadays?
Well, we'd always like better funding, but and I lived through that period here at the library, and it was awful. There were layoffs, and we were only open a half a day. We lost patrons back then, and we're still trying to get some of those people back. What we did back in 2009, traditionally we would go to the city, like all the other city departments, and present our budget and, you know, haggle back and forth. And not so surprisingly, we found we had very little clout with the city. And Bridgeport being a poor city, you know, I'm not going to cast aspersions on any mayors or city council people. They were not funding us to the level that we felt we needed. So turns out we were able to get a referendum on the ballot. And the question on that referendum was to allocate $1 million, and at the time that was about $5.8 million, to the Bridgeport Public Library. And not all the powers that be in the city were enthusiastic about that, but we all agreed, let's put it on the ballot and let the voters decide. And we won overwhelmingly. And we would get a guaranteed, at the time it was $1 million, there was a revaluation which cost us $1 million, so we went back to the voters in 2017, and they agreed to give us another 0.3. So right now we have a operating budget of about $7.5 million, and that has allowed us to keep the doors open. We've also bonded, and we've gotten some grants from the state. We just opened up the first full-service branch in the east side of Bridgeport since the 1980s. In February, we'll be reopening the Newfield branch on the east end with a state-of-the-art library that is going to be second to none. Now, both the east side library and the Newfield Library are replacing storefront libraries. That was all we were able to do for a number of years. But now that we have some sustainable funding and we are getting some help from the city and the state, things are definitely looking up.
That's fantastic. Congratulations to you. And it's more than anything, it shows that you can fight City Hall. So
I'll let you say that.
John, it was a pleasure speaking with you. I only have 10 seconds left. Any quick final thoughts? 10 seconds?
Anybody wants to help, check out our webpage. We have beportlibrary.org. And look at our friends page. You can join the friends. Doesn't cost anything. We're about to set up a foundation. Stay
All
tuned.
Right.
And if you want to help, just let us know.
John Saltis, the assistant city librarian in Bridgeport. John, thanks. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
It's the full story on WSHU, and we continue our discussion about libraries, about how great they are, how important they are, and how they are doing so much more nowadays with less. Jennifer Cohane is joining us. Jennifer is the executive director at the Connecticut Library Consortium. Jennifer, it's a pleasure to meet you. How are you?
Thank you so much. Nice to meet you too, Ron.
What is the Library Consortium?
Actually, the Connecticut Library Consortium is a statewide nonprofit formed to help libraries purchase goods and all the resources that they need at a discounted rate. And so we're formed by a state statute that said that libraries, most of them, a lot of them, need to adhere to state purchasing guidelines. And also, by the way, if you had 800 members and you could go out and negotiate and create contracts or do bids for books and supplies and databases and things like that, you could get a better price and be more efficient than if every library had to go and perform those services themselves. So we primarily do that, and then we also provide professional development and training and programs for libraries of all types across the state.
Wow, it's very similar from what you're saying to what was being proposed by the state for the educational system in the state just a few months ago, where basically regionalize and towns and cities band together because that's a way to save money.
People didn't know that their Connecticut libraries are so smart. We've been doing this since in the 70s, so it's been an ongoing regionalization program that's been working in the state of Connecticut for a long time, and we have other ones as well, including our statewide Borrow It program, which allows you to use your library card at any library in the state, as well as our delivery service. So those are all regionalization and efficiency programs that Connecticut libraries have been doing for decades.
You know, some have said to me that because of the internet and people not reading as many books nowadays, they said libraries are passe, and I have to tell you, I drive around and I go to my local library, which I love, and the libraries seem to be doing more business than ever before. What are you finding?
I think that's absolutely true. I think people say that you don't need books anymore, and there's a couple of things going on is that actually what's happening is that there is none of the formats are going away, and people are just wanting to have their information or their reading, leisure reading, or any of their entertainment in multiple formats. So I don't know about you, but I've got an ebook going, I've got a couple print books going, I've got an audio book going. And so libraries, I'm very similar with a lot of the people that I talk to, in that a lot of us are not just reading one paper book anymore. We've got all these different, you know, ways that we get our information, and they're going to the library expecting the libraries to have those materials. So there's actually more formats that are going on that we're trying to supply to. And at the same time, there's a big change in the population in that there's a lot of different changing population needs, more immigrant populations, more multicultural populations. We've also seen that even just in information, the whole idea of how do you navigate this explosion of information, there's a big part of what a public library or any library serves in that they help people navigate this, you know, huge web of information, and some, not all of it is clearly accurate or, you know, unbiased. And so that's where the role of the library in helping to organize, gather, synthesize, and provide access to accurate, unbiased, information is important.
So the death of the library has been greatly exaggerated, huh?
Oh, gosh. And the reason why you may not know is because all the librarians are so busy keeping up, we haven't had time to tell anybody.
I am enjoying speaking with you, Jennifer. But here's the thing. I would think that so many towns or cities nowadays are struggling in terms of just providing other services. And I'm guessing, and I have no statistics or whatever to back this up, but I'm guessing libraries count on so much more private support nowadays. Would I be wrong in thinking that?
No, you wouldn't be wrong. I think they are. I think a lot of libraries aren't set up to be seeking private support in that they have been, in many cases, been public departments. And so creating a campaign or a development program is something that we are seeing more roles of library development officers, particularly with association libraries. But I think that the shift hasn't happened yet. That shift takes time and energy and resources as well.
So it's something in the future where they may simply turn to their community and say, look, you know, we provide a valuable resource. Come on out and give us a hand every now and then.
Well, you know, there are other states like our neighboring state in New York where there is a percentage of the taxes that are collected are specifically earmarked for libraries. That is something that's happened in other states and other communities that, you know, we've always thought would be something would be really great to have the public be able to vote on something like that, because we think that there is a strong support for libraries that doesn't always trickle through all of the laws and budget processes in our municipal and state level.
You've been doing this for a few years now, and you've seen the evolution and how the libraries have changed. And like you said, all the different formats now, and then you have librarians helping all of us navigate all these different formats and figure it out. How do you see this evolving over the next 5-10 years? Is there something that we should be looking at that right now we're saying, we don't even see that?
I think that one of the issues that's going to be coming out is going to be that privacy. I think that we've gotten so accustomed to convenience that people, I think, have gotten a little sloppy with the protection of their privacy and some of their rights. And I think that the library's core role in privacy and First Amendment rights is going to be something that we're going to be looked to again.
Do you mean from a writer's or publisher's point of view, or do you mean from those who may be checking out books? Really?
Yeah. I think that what we're seeing from a publisher's point of view and from a writer's point of view is we have a challenge with e-books in the library community, and that most e-books cost us more than an individual, and our ability to purchase e-books is sometimes limited by publishers. So our access to information is limited. In addition to that, I think also just from an individual's point of view, where I think we've become very accustomed to having the convenience of, you know, everything we've purchased, everything we've borrowed, those kinds of things. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago that the Patriot Act was that there were four librarians in Connecticut that upheld their right to protect patrons' privacy under the Patriot Act. And I think that libraries are sort of one of the last bastions of protection for individuals when it comes to privacy and First Amendment rights. And so I think that's something that people overlook until we lose those rights.
Jennifer, I have enjoyed our conversation today, and I hope we get a chance to have you back on the program in the future.
Would love to do it, Ron. There's a lot more to talk about.
Fantastic. Jennifer Cohane, who is the Executive Director at the Connecticut Library Consortium. Jennifer, once again, my thanks to you. It was a pleasure. We're going to wrap up today's program by talking about libraries with Carrie Rosalia, who's the Library Director at Mastix Mariches Shirley Community Library. Carrie, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you on the air.
Thanks for having me.
And Mike Firestone is there, Library Director at the Bayport Blue Point Public Library. Hi, Mike. How are you?
How are you?
I'm great, thank you. And I need to say this at the beginning. Carrie, Mike, you're married, right?
Thank you. Yes, we are.
So I have to ask, for librarians, what was the wedding song? Was it Book of Love by the Monotones, or was it Jimmy Buffett's Love in the Library?
I don't remember if we had a wedding song.
How are things going in your libraries? Mike, I'm going to start with you, please. Are you more busy than ever?
We are. We're in a transition period. Our library, just about a year ago, last December, the community passed a bond referendum to build a bigger, newer library down the block. So for our small, establishment that we're in now, we're quite busy. It's a good time of year for us with a lot of students and activities, but we're looking forward to moving down the block to a bigger facility.
So, Mike, when will this new building be finished?
We're probably about 18 to 20 months away, so a lot of preparation work going into it now, lots of documents, pre-construction type paperwork, and but we're looking forward to breaking ground early in 2020.
Carrie, how's business for you?
We're busier than ever. We have a 45,000 square foot main library serving about 60,000 residents, and we see about 800 to 1,000 people through our front doors every day for all different types of reasons.
Isn't this great? Because I was talking about this with guests in our other segments, and I remember a few years back when everyone was saying, libraries are done because everyone's going to be downloading, it'll be digital, we're all going to be hanging out in Starbucks and reading things on our iPads. But you guys are busier than ever nowadays. Mike, why is that?
Well, I think just libraries in general have evolved to serve the communities that they are servicing, and so we adapt and we just roll with what the community's needs are, and so whether it's digital needs or reference needs or programming and entertainment for the community, libraries in general across the nation and the world have just found ways to fill niches, which ultimately is community needs.
Carrie, how have you adapted?
I would concur with what Mike said. We're serving lifelong learners today. And for those patrons, they might be coming in for career counseling. They might be coming in for digital literacy help. They may be coming in for coding clubs, for all kinds of online training that we offer. And yes, there is a lot of information out there digitally for people, and everyone is reading on their iPhones and their iPads and their computers. However, there's so much information out there and so much unreliable information out there. I think we're also just helping people filter through the tsunami of data and information and try to find it. Real information and factual.
Mike, that's a tough job because, there's so many sources available online and we all click on something and we think that's accurate. How do you ensure accuracy?
I think that's just the nature of the profession. Library schools do a great job teaching our professional librarians how to vet information and make sure that we're giving accurate information to the public. I think in today's world where everybody wants instant information, instant information, based on Facebook and, maybe some, Google, hits are not always 100% accurate. And so taking the extra moments to verify and just make sure you're getting accurate information is something that, library schools do a great job, training the professional librarians. But, everybody that's out there should, take a couple extra seconds to make sure, reading about, the monster with three legs is, probably fake. You should just take a couple extra steps before you, repost something and just, take everything that you read, on social media as, fact.
Carrie, just out of curiosity, what kind of training do you get to ensure that accuracy? How are you taught to do that?
Well, certainly our librarians, as Mike indicated, all have professional master's degrees in library science. And discerning information and conducting authentic research is part of our graduate level training.
Can I talk to you both a little bit about something that your Connecticut colleagues were speaking about just a short time ago? And that's money. All service. Everybody needs some money for funding nowadays. Do you have enough to do what you want to do? And Mike, can I start with you there?
I think... you know, any municipality in today's world is going to struggle to get enough money to do everything they want to do. I think we're all kind of fighting for the same, you know, tax dollars. And, you know, we try to do as much as we can with the money that we're given. I think Long Island and, you know, the state of New York has a slightly different, you know, structure for funding public libraries. Most of our funding comes through local tax base. And so, you know, every year we put up a referendum to the community on, you know, what we're looking to do and projects we'd like to deliver for them. And we hope to be able to, you know, sell the proposed budget to the community and then go out and deliver the services that we told them we would deliver for them.
Before Kerry responds to that same question, Mike, how did you get the money for your new building? Was it a battle? Was it difficult to get that?
Yeah, it was probably an abbreviated process. We had a unique situation where down the block from our current library was a retreat for the nuns. It was a convent on 8 acres. It was a 35,000 square foot building, but the nuns could no longer, you know, care for the property and the building. And so they were looking to, you know, sell it. And so the convent meant a lot to the community. Our library was old, small, and, you know, certainly outdated for the services that, you know, libraries can offer in today's world. And so, you know, there really became a groundswell for, you know, the library to, you know, see if it was a viable option for us. And so we did a year's due diligence, and we went out and did some PR work and spoke at lots of meetings, and you know, ultimately put a referendum up for the public last December, and it was a sizable turnout, almost a presidential type response for our vote. I think we had about just over 25% of the eligible voters came out and voted in the referendum, and it passed nearly 2-1. So great support from the community.
Kerry, what about you? Do you have enough funding to do what you want to do or need to do?
I think it's more of a struggle in my community than it is in Mike's. We do have a sizable operating budget. We are serving a very large population, but we are in need of a facility renovation and additional space. We're undersized for our community. So we have had a couple of attempts to ask the community through referendums to fund building expansion or building projects, and they have not passed. We actually have another referendum scheduled for December 10th for a $26 million and change project, bond of $22 million and change that will cost the average taxpayer in our community an additional $7 a month in library service. And if that project passes, we'll have a full renovation of our 45,000 square foot library, and we'll be adding two additional 7,000 square foot branches. So we're very hopeful. It's a compressed timeline getting to the vote, and we're working on going out to community meetings and advocating for our library and educating people about the project currently.
Do you have any feel for the outcome of the vote?
I'm hopeful. It's, as Mike said, we are competing for tax dollars with other municipalities. Unfortunately, libraries on Long Island, it's one of the only taxes that our communities get to vote on. And so often they're taxed without having an opportunity to vote yes or no. But the library is one of those things that they can vote on. We're hopeful. Unfortunately, unlike schools on Long Island, we don't receive much state aid. In fact, my library with a $10 million operating budget currently received less than $16,000 in state aid last year. So unlike schools, when we ask for facility work or big bond referendums to fix infrastructure or expand, it really is almost fully funded through property taxes. And it's difficult on Long Island.
Can you get private donations? Can that be worked into the budget?
We certainly can look for funding and would approach our elected officials and grant sources, but we have to have an approved project first to pursue that. And there is some construction aid in New York State for public libraries. It's just not enough and to make a difference in a project of any major size.
So, Mike, in many ways, it comes down to what I've heard other people say. Look, if you give up that fancy cup of coffee a day, and instead that money goes to something like the library, it's a decent trade-off.
You know, I'd like to think so. Libraries serve a population that's really pre-birth through death. So many expecting parents are coming in and trying to get information about, what to expect and, things that steps they can take, prior to, the baby even being born. And then you start automatically, once the child is born with, literacy needs and, recreational needs through library programs and, read to me programs and baby programs. And then, all the way up to our seniors when people are retired and, they need something to do and an outlet. And so, libraries are that as well. And so, we serve this, vast population, and we try to do enough for everybody. And so we do think that if you can forego that cup of coffee today and think highly of your library, that money will be well spent for you and your community.
And Kerry, not only that, let's be honest about this. If you go to so many libraries nowadays and you see all the kids that are there, and when school lets out, mom and dad have to work, and they say, look, I need someplace safe for you to be. I can't get you right now. Go do your homework at the library, right?
Absolutely. We see so many children after school and teenagers as well. And there's always an outcry for more activities for our youth to keep them off the streets and out of trouble. And the public library can definitely be that safe space that also offers all types of educational program to combat things that could go wrong when our youth have too much time on their hands.
Kerry, does that in some cases bother you a little bit? Because, I mean, you already do so much, and at the same time, you're being asked to keep an eye on the kids, if you will.
No, I think our staff is really well equipped to handle that, and they're excited to see the children, and we know that we can make a huge difference in our children's lives and our community, so we're excited to do it. It would be great if parents didn't have to work multiple jobs and they had more time to spend with their families, but we feel that we're that third safe place that they can come and we can be of great assistance.
Mike, how do you see libraries evolving over the next 5 to 10 years? Obviously, you have that new building coming up, and I'm sure it's going to be beautiful, but they changed so much in the last decade or two. Where are we going from here?
You know, for us, we're taking an approach where we want to be flexible. The design of the new building and the property is going to allow us to be flexible for our community for, decades to come. You know, our room designs are going to be, flexible. You know, we're not going to be these a fixed, service plan. You know, we want to be as viable and responsive to community needs going forward. And so, it's easy to pick today's, hot topics, which, for a lot of communities is archival, getting into the local history, make sure it's preserved, archived, digitized. That's a subset of, what we, kind of do as a library is preserve information and share information, but also to support the schools, curriculums, parents, students, with STEM and STEAM labs, make sure you have maker spaces and, adequate, services for the students and the teachers and the parents. So, we just want to be as flexible going forward as we can.
Kerry, where do you see your library going in the future?
Oh, I hope it's going that way. A little envious of Mike's project because it really is underway. But I agree with what he's saying as far as the needs that the facility can provide. And we're very hopeful that if our bond passes on December 10th, we'll be offering many of those same services. Unfortunately, if it doesn't, our library is probably faced with some significant closure periods for renovations while trying to operate out of that building.
You know, I think I hear the police back there, and they're probably going after someone who hasn't returned the book on time, right? I mean, there's got to be some major fines involved there if they've got the siren on for that. Mike, the one thing that we didn't touch on, and I only have 2 minutes left, but one thing we didn't touch on is we were talking about the kids, but it's also a place now for seniors to go, right? You go there in the morning, and many libraries have cafes, and sure, a senior can get a newspaper, can get the latest book. And like you said, the technology, the new technology is there for them to learn.
Yeah, I think we do. Most libraries, you know, do a lot of, offer a lot of services for seniors. I would say our most popular program for adults of any age is our Senior Flex program. So a couple of days a week in the mornings, we have an instructor come in and basically teach, light aerobics to seniors. And it is a packed class each and every week. Another thing that, we offer to a lot of our seniors is as devices change and technology changes, we offer one-on-one, tech help for seniors. So if they get a new phone or, they want to, check out how to stream Netflix, they can come in and get a one-on-one with our librarians and, we'll help teach them how to utilize, some of these, cool things that are out there in today's world.
I think that's fantastic. Carrie, how about for you?
I would say the same. Our chair yoga program in the mornings for seniors is one of our more popular programs. It fills immediately when registration opens, and if we had a few more meeting rooms, we'd be offering it more frequently and giving more people access to it. And we also provide technology training for seniors in addition to other things that can help them with their recreational needs, such as free museum passes, mobile hotspots that they can take with them when they're vacationing to provide internet access and things of that nature. So,
And just with the few seconds I have left, Carrie, do you accept donations? Do you look for volunteers?
We do accept donations, and we do have some volunteer work going on, particularly community service for our youth who may have to fulfill some kind of requirement. And so we have all kinds of volunteer opportunities for them.
Mike, what about you? Volunteers, donations?
Yeah, both. We have a very active community, both looking to volunteer and to make donations. And so, we have a couple of different projects going on where, Friends at a Library is mostly all volunteers that go out and try to do some fundraisers for the libraries, but also get their hands dirty and help us on, some projects that we're working on.
Mike Firestone, Library Director at Bayport Blue Point Public Library, and Carrie Rosalia, Library Director at Mastix Mauritius Shirley Community Library. Thank you both. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. This was great.
Thank you so much.
That's going to do it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is the engineer. Carrie Frank's the digital editor. J.D. Allen is the producer. And Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Libraries are the coolest place. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.